The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
How you doing?
My fault for thinking there's any place around here secluded.
So welcome to LA. This is gonna be a long update. I spent the entire month here and didn't record a single thing. It's been an interesting and busy month. It's been a good month. It could have been busier. I could have booked more things. I did, all right, so sister and I did a lot of walking, a lot of hiking. A comedian friend of mine, Tia J, who I know through Clubhouse, back in the pandemic days, pandemic friend, soon to be guest on the podcast. Her and I did a couple of hikes together through Fryman Canyon. That's the name of the place. Right now we're at Griffith Park, which is nice and very hilly. There's a lot of up and down. A lot of walking up and down. So my friend Tia, she hikes every day. Actually, she runs. She runs through Fryman Canyon every day. And it was every day she's not working. And she does a bunch of social media posts, thoughts from a rock. She sits on a nice little secluded rock area and pontificates. And they're always full of positive vibes, you know. They're always a good intention, good meaningful, thought provoking conversations from herself to her camera. And I was very envious of these thoughts. I wish that I had that kind of confidence. We've talked about earlier on the difficulties that I have just doing this, talking to it, especially finding a place here in Griffith Park that's secluded enough to record these, which is not at all. There's so many people around here. I found this little spot, and the only secluded place has no view because there's a fucking tree here. But anyway, I wanted to have that kind of mindfulness. Sister and I did a lot of hiking, a lot of exercising. There's a dog park, you know, 2 miles from the Airbnb that we're staying at, and we went there almost every other day, so sister can go see other dogs, hang out with them. Right, sister?
Come here. Did you have fun with the other doggies at the park?
And then we would walk, you know, I always tried to make sure that we walked at least a mile and a half, 2 miles every day that we went to the park. There's a little gym and exercise equipment also there at the park that, you know, I would try to work out in. And of course, the first 18 days I was here, it rained 8 of those days, something like that. It was a lot of rain. So it was a lot of wet pants on the workout equipment at the Eagle Rock Park. Of course, we got past that and did less working out, but we still did the walking and the hiking a lot. I know my updates are mostly sister updates because that's what people care about, her more than me. There was some upsettingness because sister hasn't socialized the way that she used to, so we don't go out the past year, I'd say. Her and I don't go to the park and socialize with dogs as much as we used to. And I wanted to rectify that because I noticed a small little regression in her interactions with dogs. She was getting agitated easily and quicker. When I first got her, she hated other dogs. She, as soon as she saw a dog, and it took 5 months of taking her to the park and letting her get close to dogs through a fence. That's what I did. You know, maybe this training will help somebody. We went up to a fence and let the dogs come up to her fence, and she would smell them. They'd smell her, and if she barked and snarled at them, you'd pull her away and scold her. If she wouldn't, give her positive affirmations and treats. 5 months of this every day. It took to get her to just, we would slowly start going into the park, come up to the dogs, and you know, same situation, let her get to the dogs, let her get close, keep her on leash, and do this.
Yeah, that's
And then slowly going into the dog area, let her go up to dogs, same thing. She barks and snarls, take her, walk, leave. And when she would be good, you reward her. You know, I think the vocal affirmations, both positive and negative, was a key to the success of getting Sister acclimated to hang out with other dogs. And eventually we could start going into the dog area and she would be okay with dogs and you'd take her off leash and boom, she'd play with dogs. And she was good for 3 years. Probably close to 4 years. And now recently she gets much, you know, she always had a little thing. If a dog gets too much in her mouth, like I call it playing dentist, she would get upset and she would snap it at its time. And again, you know, scold her. And most people are okay with it. They're like, yeah, no, she's setting boundaries. That's fine. That's what dogs do. You know, or, hey, she's a puppy. She needs to learn. You know, our puppy needs to learn. They need to learn that it can't be this way. You know, and I want Sister to have healthy boundaries. I want her to also be accepting to other dogs. So there was that little back and forth. It was fine for the most part. And now, as soon as she's not see other dogs, but if any dog got too close to her, too fast. She was snapping too easily, I think. And I don't want that to become a habit. I don't want her to regress into back to not being social with other dogs. So that was one of the reasons going to the park all the time. And it took almost this whole month, but there were still a little few incidents where she would, you know, fly off the handle a little too easily, if you ask me. But she seems to be better. She's better with the car. She gets less anxious in the car. There is still some drooling and panting, but it's lessened. She also reacclimates to calming down after the ride faster. So there's that. We got 10-day, 2-week drive back to Boston, a couple more cities to hit, a couple more shows to do. And hopefully by the time we get back to Boston, she'll just absolutely love the car. I don't foresee that happening. But the car is covered in her hair no matter what.
So we had to move. There was too many people. In addition to you know, seeing pandemic friends and LA friends, this is actually a good surprise, is I ran into my friend Casey Crawford here. He's a Boston comedian, and him and his wife, his wife works, she's a teacher at Berkeley. Peabody in Boston, the Peabody Institute. She's a teacher there, and I guess she has sabbatical times where they give her a semester to kind of just not have to come to the school to work and make a remote lesson plan. I don't really know the details. It sounds cool and fun, so what they decided to do is take advantage of that sabbatical, and they bought a camper van, and they decked it out, and they drove across country in a camper van, similar to how Sister and I are driving across country in a Kia Soul. But they're living in their vehicle, and they're in an RV park, and they're having a good time, and they're going to be here for a couple months. So it was nice having a friend out here to do open mics with. It was nice having someone to hang out with, to talk about things. And what was even better is that I didn't have to make the decisions of the places I was going to go to every single night. Like, I could just text him and be like, hey, Casey, what do you want to do tonight? Which open mic do you want to go to? And I had somebody else on my side with me, and he has friends here, and it was a good time. The first open mic I went to in town was a Boomtown open mic, was this brewery. On Monday night, the first night, the night after, you know, I got here on Sunday and got settled in, on Monday went right back out to a comedy. And speaking of friends, I run into my friend Hendren Seavey, who was also Boston area comedian for a while, moved out here. He, a couple years ago, him and his wife, now wife, fiance at the time, they bought a bus, decked it out, and they drove across country just doing comedy. She works remotely, and he was able to do comedy as they drove across the country, living in this converted school bus. And then they moved out here, sold the bus, and he's just been living out here and doing comedy and doing well for himself. And actually comes to find out he's moving to Austin now. Go figure. And we'll see how that works out for him. But it was nice seeing friends. Especially, like, surprise, like, at the Boomtown mic, I'm just sitting there, it's a, you know, bucket mic, you know, you put all your names in a bucket, and they pull it out randomly, you know, they're like, next up's going to be so-and-so, and coming up to the stage now is so-and-so, and, you know, it's like, coming up next on the stage is Dennis Maller, but before that, give it up for whomever it was, And I just feel somebody come up from behind me, put his arms over my shoulder, around my shoulders, and just shook me a little bit and just whisper in my ears, like, what are you doing here, motherfucker? And I was like, ah, Jordan. His real name's Jordan. He goes by Hendren CV. And I was like, oh, lovely seeing him there. Like, he's get out. He's doing the work. He's putting in the time. Like, there was barely an open mic that Casey and I went to that Jordan wasn't also already at or was likely to be at.
Typical Casey sleep apnea is defined by if your body has to wake itself up more than three times in a night because it has difficulty breathing. My sleep apnea study showed on average I woke up 65 times an hour. Do you understand that's mathematically impossible, right, sir? Like, if you're awake 65 times in one 60-minute period, you're not sleeping. It's Netflix with your eyes closed. I did cure my sleep apnea, though. The way I cured my sleep apnea is that I lost 80 pounds. Then I gained back 20, so I didn't cure it as much as I put sleep apnea on pause, if you know what I'm saying. But I did lose 80 pounds, and I lost a bunch of weight, and I cured sleep apnea. By the way, you know what the best part of losing 80 pounds is? Is I no longer snore at my desk at work, so.
So it was fun having friends in town. It was fun, nice having somebody on your side to give you information, to tell you what to do, where to go, and what to avoid. Because the open mic scene here is, it's different here. It's different. Compared to all the other open mics that you've heard me complain about, there's at least women at these. I don't think there was a single open mic that was not, had at least a woman at. So there's women out here who want to do comedy. Go figure. But you really got to look out because there's some open mics that just aren't worth your time. There's a website called Slotted that has become very prevalent in the comedy open mic world, but more, very much more here. Basically, a lot of places use this to sign up ahead of time. You go to slotted.com/whatever the name is, whatever the URL is, and you sign up. And there's a couple of clubs that just do like hourly open mics. Every hour is a new open mic, and they only take X amount of people. You get X amount of time. You pay X amount of money. And that is, it's just a room full of those comedians. You're supposed to support each other. And there are a couple of places that do that style of open mics here. And while I think it might be a good, safe place to start learning how to be a comedian, how to do open mics and meet other comedians and figure out where to go, I don't know if it's particularly productive for me. You know, again, I don't need to go on stage and learn how to talk in front of people. I don't need to learn how to pull the mic out of the mic stand and move it to the side and get comfortable talking stage. I have all that. I got stage presence. I got stage presence for days. I have comfortability on stage. Got that in spades. What I need to know if my jokes work. And you can't create jokes in a vacuum. Jokes need feedback. They need life. So these open mics, 2 years ago when I was here, I did a bunch of those. I did quite a few, more than I really should have. Thinking that, oh, well, this one won't be like the other one. No, they're all the same. You know, just, you know, 5 to 10 comedians sitting around a room, staring at each other. There's really no camaraderie. There's no socializing. And of course, the place doesn't give you the time to socialize and make it because, you know, that let's say that you get, you know, 5 people, that's 10 people, 5 minutes apiece. It's 50 minutes. Every hour is a new group of 10 people coming in. So when do you get to socialize with them? In the 10 minutes before they don't even give you that 10 minutes to kick you out before they start letting the other comedians in to set up the next open mic. You know, stand on the street and talk to each other. Now, I'm not to say that no one ever talks or socializes, but it's, I think, better, you know, finding a place in public. But again, a lot of these public mics, you know, at bars and restaurants and breweries, a lot of breweries. Comedy is in breweries now. Breweries love comedy. Comedy loves breweries. It's Sometimes those aren't full of people either. So. But yeah, Casey and I, got around doing the open mics together. And since he has the van and his van, hogs a lot more gas and his wife is in the van, I offered a lot to pick him up. He was taking public transit and it took him, bless his heart, like it took him sometimes 2 hours to get certain open mics and shows. And I'm like, bro, just let me drive you. You're 20 minutes from where I'm staying. It's not a big deal to give you a ride, pick you up and take you places and, drop you off at the van on the way back. Which, by the way, this is how him and I met. So Jordan comes up to me and sneaks up on me and he's like, hey, what's up? He's got a gig at this place called Accidental Chaos, which is like a misfits only club. Bless the heart of the people that this Accidental Chaos, because it's an ironic name because none of that chaos is accidental. It's a crazy, crazy, crazy place. It's a small little performance practice space in a building of other rooms and stuff. Rented out, they decked it out, it's got chairs and a stage and a sound system and this and that, and they're doing comedy most nights of the week there, and they're trying, there's open mics and there's shows, and it's BYOB, or they're selling beers illegally. It's a crazy little space, and it's full of the misfits of the misfits, which is nice. So, but Jordan had a show there on Friday, and he invited me. I was going to go anyway, and he was like, come along, I'll throw you up. And he ran into Casey and told Casey the same thing. So Casey and I went up, and we did little times in front of a room full of misfits. It was fun. It reminded me of the days of my 20s when we were in bands and I was managing punk bands and we were hanging out at the Electric Church, the Dirt Church as we called it, which was a band performance space in Highland Town in Baltimore City. It was just full of decadence and dirt, disgustingness. And HR, the lead singer of Bad Brains, was living there too. So, sometimes you get to hang out with a punk rock legend. There was definitely some insanity to Accidental Chaos, but I enjoyed it a little bit. Will I enjoy it every day, kind of? No. Enjoy it every once in a while, that craziness.
By the way, we can all admit an Ice-T impression is the racist black man impression to do, right? Like, an Ice-T impression is literally Ice-T and no other black person ever. So I'm talking to the police, and you guys are just going, what the fuck is that? Oh, the police were coming to see me. Because you're just going to find this funny. Oh, it's hilarious. They were coming to see me because they got a call from my former employer because they thought that I was going to come shoot up the building. Now, look, I can understand that, all right? I'm not a violent man. I don't own guns. I would never do anything like that, but I do understand that because I do have resting mass shooter face. Like, I look like a background actor from American History X. I look like I have a very well-rehearsed alibi for January 6th. If you saw my face in a newspaper, you will know somewhere in that article, it will say, in his manifesto.
And then I went to open mic at the Improv. No, wait, no, I did go to the Improv. Yes, so there's three big clubs in L.A. There is the Improv, there is the Comedy Store, and then there is Laugh Factory. Each three of them, those are the big three clubs. Comedy Store is where comedy was birthed. The Improv was the first comedy club. The Improvisation, as it was originally called. Everyone wants to perform on their stages. Everybody wants to get past at these clubs. These clubs are the ones that set the standard for how comedy clubs operate across the country, across the world. So I went to the Improv one. The way they do it is a bucket mic. Again, you throw your name on a piece of paper, throw it in a bucket, randomly gets pulled. It's in front of the booker. All three of these clubs do their open mics in front of the booker. Because you want to be seen by the booker, because you want to get booked there, Not a lot of clubs have, all clubs kind of do bringer shows, perform in front of the club, and they're veiled attempts at just selling chicken wings to 80 of your friends. This one gets a crowd, but even if it didn't get a crowd, the amount of comedians that come out to it is the crowd in itself, you know? You have 60, 70, 80, 100 comedians throwing their names in a bucket, hoping for their chance at 2 to 3 minutes. 2 to 3 minutes, that's all it is, 2 to 3 minutes. And some people say, you know, 2 to 3 minutes, that's not enough time to develop anything, that's not enough time to connect with an audience, that's not enough time to showcase your comedy. Well, that's what you have to do. This is not an open mic. This is not pontificating on stage. This is 2 to 3 minutes of your best material. And Casey and I had a couple of conversations about this. But when I did the improv, I did it by myself, and I went there and threw my name in the bucket, and it was a nervousness because I didn't want to miss my name getting called. It's another one that's like, pull a name out. All right, in the hole is so-and-so. Up next is so-and-so. But coming to stage right now is so-and-so. And if you go out of the room and grab a drink, go to the bathroom, they say your name, you miss it. You miss your 2 to 3 minutes. Nothing's going to come. It's not like the bucket's going to remember your name and go, oh, we're never going to ever deal with that person again. We'll never let him on stage. But you don't want to embarrass yourself. You don't want to go over your time, which I did. Spoiler alert, I did. I had my 3 minutes, and I did well. The 3 minutes was great.
Learning a lot of things about our country. One of the things I learned, did you guys know that Coca-Cola was invented in the city of Atlanta, Georgia? Yeah. Did you know the very first and oldest fast food restaurant is in the city of Atlanta, Georgia? Did you know the state of Georgia sells more Coca-Cola than anywhere else in the world? Did you know the official liquid of Georgia is insulin because they all have diabetes? I also have diabetes, by no shock of anyone in the room with eyes. I'm having a lot of trouble with the diagnosis because, let's be honest, type 1 diabetes is a very serious and important medical condition. And type 2 diabetes is my fault. But here's the good news. I don't have type 2 diabetes. I have a third option of diabetes. Did you guys know there's 3 types of diabetes? Yeah. Why are there more types of diabetes than there are good Godfather movies?
Of course, you don't have time to record. I don't have time to record. I didn't have time to set up the camera. I just did it. I don't even know if they let you. Some of them specifically say you can't record your set. Like, whatever. But I went over my time. I got called out, but it's fine. It was a good chance, you know. But also, that was one of the days, you know, the booker's not always there. They'll tell you ahead of time, you know, so-and-so's not Rita, in the case of the improv, is not here. And so what does it matter? You know, I performed well in front of the other comedians, which, you know, it helps you get recognized by other comedians who book shows and have sway in things. And the comedians are going to give you advice and places to go and recommendations. Like, oh, yeah, I met that guy. He's good. He's good. He's funny. You know, if someone asks or if your name comes up again. And, of course, all the comedians are there, both good, bad. You know, everyone who wants to who's already not performing at the club, they're there. So I ran into some friends. I ran into my friend Reed Clark, who's a Baltimore comedian living out here. And he put me on a couple of his shows. We'll talk about those later. But the improv has 2 of those. You know, one called the lab and one called the bucket mic or whatever it is. It might just be called open mic. Now, the way the Laugh Factory does their open mic, Casey and I went to it together. And it is, you got to show up at a certain time. First 10 names on the list, guaranteed to get shown. They'll take up to 20, 25 people. And it's a bucket after 10. You know, if there's, say, 50 people show up, those last 40, their names go in the bucket and they randomly draw the next 15 names. So you're not guaranteed to get on. I mean, you're not guaranteed at the other ones either, but 10, the first 10 are guaranteed. And both the 3 times I went, I got on. And I got in there, before the 10-person cutoff. And most of the time, there's only 20-some people there. They say, hey, we'll probably see everybody tonight. We're not going to do any random draws. Everybody's going to get. And again, it's 2, 3 minutes, whatever it is. And the booker's there. And first time Casey and I did it together, Casey gets called back. I don't. You know, that's the thing. Hey, we want you to come back next week. You don't have to wait in line. You don't have to get it early. Just show up here at 5:30 when we open the door. And you're automatically in the top 10, the first 10. So we came back the next week and did it together, and, you know, he did well again. And they didn't call him back, but, you know, I did a whole different set. One of the things that Laugh Factory asks you to do is be clean. Do 2 to 3 minutes of clean comedy. I cursed one storm, I said. Didn't even realize it. Took me a while later on before I realized that I cursed. I said bitch in one of my jokes.
Oh, guys, thank you. Much like Andre, I recently just had that very important medical procedure where the doctor takes a finger and sticks it in the
Yeah. That's the last time I go to that dentist.
I live with obsessive compulsive disorder. I do not suffer from OCD. I suffer from people who talk to me like they think they have OCD. I was on a date with a woman one time and she goes, "Oh my God, I have OCD. That's why I gotta make sure all the pictures in my house are straight." I told her I was late to our date because I can't step on shadows. Like, you're not on my level, lady, okay? Don't culturally appropriate my mental disorder. Speaking of mental disorders, I'm currently driving across the country right now with my my service dog. Her name is Sister. Sister's a very cute name for a dog until you lose her. And then you gotta walk around the neighborhood. Have you guys seen my sister? She got out of her cage trying to eat a rat. Why are you calling the police? Put the phone down. Let me explain. With my dog, I got her during the pandemic originally. And when you get a dog what do people ask you? "Oh my God, is it a rescue?" You tell them if it is, and I hate telling people she's a rescue, because then what's the next question? Who saved who? I hate that question. Because it's whom, bitch. Secondly, no one pulled anyone else out of a burning building, so no one saved anybody. Like, I got the dog during the pandemic, right? I'm not a hero because I adopted this dog during COVID. I got the dog because I wanted someone else to talk to other than my roommate. That doesn't make me a hero. That got me banned from PetSmart. I recently was diagnosed with diabetes, which makes sense because diabetes runs in my family. In fact, diabetes is the only thing that runs in my family. If more of us ran, we would have less diabetes. I am Ben Arizona. Thank you guys very much tonight.
It was just a joke that I've been doing, and I said it, and I mean, that curse. So maybe that didn't get me to move on. I don't know. Again, Casey and I had a theory. And we'll go over that second. And so the next week, I decided to do a whole nother set of jokes, shorter jokes. I decided to do a story the second time. My closer.
Here to help you with that. I am a full-time comedian. Thank you for not applauding that, because you all know that means I'm unemployed. But right now, I'm in the middle of a three-month comedy tour that's sponsored by the Massachusetts State Unemployment. I love driving my car, listening to music, makes a noise. You guys know the song Superstition by Stevie Wonder? Yeah, love that song. I was listening to that song recently, I'm driving the car, I got the windows rolled down, I got the volume cranked up. I'm just screaming at the top of my lungs. I'm singing at the top of my lungs. Sorry, it's weird if I'm just driving down the street going, "Ah!" So I'm singing at the top of my lungs. And it comes over red light, and the cop car pulls up next to me. And he starts rolling down his window, and I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, officer." And I turned down the volume, and that's when this cop looked at me and went, "You don't know nothing about Stevie Wonder." This cop then turned on Superstition by Stevie Wonder on his own radio. In the middle of the song, peeled wheels, and then drove away through the red light. Like, do you guys ever say anything more awesome this cop could have done in the moment was just pop all cats as he drove away? I do love telling that story, because it's a true story mostly, but also because I do comedy around the country, and when you do comedy around the country, you end up having to do comedy in places that you don't expect to do comedy, like VFW halls or Knights of Columbus. Or places, and I was doing it like a variety show where there's musicians on, and you know, I could like show, you know, comedy show with burlesque dancers. I keep my clothes on, don't worry. And I'm doing that, I'm telling that story, and right, one of the musicians shows right here, front row, middle row, listen to me tell that story, right? Pulls out this tiny little keyboard with a hose on it, puts the hose in mouth, and starts playing Superstition by Stevie Wonder on this tiny little keyboard. As I'm telling that story, I was like, "Oh my God, I didn't know you could be that much of a drunk, your keyboard, and a breathalyzer." I'm in debt on this time, thank you.
I mean, I know this joke like the back of my hand. I know there's no cursing. It's clean. So I do that as well. It goes well, gets laughs, and didn't get a call back. So Casey and I were talking. He thinks that the bookers want to see you doing topical material. They want to see you, that you can write jokes and keep the crowd engaged. Anybody can be funny when you're using tried and true material. I guess there's something like it comes to that. I mean, maybe they want to see you enough times. I don't know. Maybe they want to see you multiple times to see what you can do. I figure if I can go in there and I can give you solid after solid after solid material, then you'll book me. I mean, my material's not topical. It's not current. I don't have any jokes about what's going on in the world today. If something comes up, maybe I'll put something. Now, I just avoid that stuff because there's just so much that's just overwrote and overdone, and it's everywhere. And it's just not me. I mean, again, I'll come up with a quip here or there, but I don't put things regularly in my repertoire. But he thinks the reason he got that callback is he had a good Cybertruck joke. That's kind of evergreen. And he thinks that maybe that helped him. And then the second time he did the next set, he didn't do anything really topical like that about what was going on in the world today. And he thinks that's what may not have called him back. I don't know. Again, the reason why I think I got hung up on not getting asked back for multiple auditions is because I thought I had a good foot in the door. There was another comedian that I know through the pandemic, Dan Green. We follow each other on Instagram. You know, we're not friends. We've probably never really talked outside of the couple Zoom open mics we did, but I messaged him because he runs a show, and I was like, hey, can I do your show when I'm in town in LA? And he's like, oh, sorry, mate, he's from Australia. I'm not doing my show that month. I'm taking a break from it. All right, that happens. Well, he runs the open mic at the Laugh Factory. So I had somebody on my side, I thought, at least. You know, I mean, you can't rely on that. Can't rely on nepotism. That's not what I'm hoping. I'm hoping, it's because so-and-so knows and likes me. That'll get me the chance. Now, I feel like it doesn't hurt. At least he saw me being funny. He saw me being charismatic and talkative and charming and not a crazy person that, you know, I wear pants in public. I'm not going out on weird ramblings. I'm not a unfunny person. So I figure at least he goes, oh, hey, I know him, by the way. FYI, he's good. He's you know, he could vouch. But he doesn't know me well enough to vouch for me. So I don't want to put that on somebody. But you can't help but think that. I was like, well, he knows me. But then again, maybe he also knows that, hey, I'm just saying that hi to him because he works at the club and I want to get in there. Who knows? But anyway, you make small talk with people. I would have made small talk with whomever it was that was working. The store. The way the store does it, they have two different show open mics. One of them is on Sunday night at 10:30. It's called Set of the Night. And the way this one works out, because, you know, comedy clubs and bars, restaurants, breweries, they all got to make money. So they have open mics and they have comedy shows. And they have two-item minimums, you know. So if you come for the show, you have to buy two items. And sometimes these the item minimums apply to the comedians as well at certain places. Obviously not book shows, but some people do open mics. It's like, hey, you have to buy 1 to 2 drinks or something to eat, you know, food. So the club makes money. And now, so far the open mics I've talked about have not had item minimums. The store does. Saturday Night does. The way it works out is you buy something from the bar, write your name on the receipt, put it in the bucket. They draw names out of the bucket. And they put the 5 names at a time on the monitor above the bar. And so every 10 minutes or so, you have to check the monitor to see if your name's on it. And the best 3 to 5 sets of the night come back and later the night and they go do another 2-3 minutes in front of the audience, and the audience comes out for it, and they vote for it, and whoever gets the set of the night gets a guaranteed spot on the open mic on Monday night. The open mic Monday, it's 60-plus names. You sign up on the sheet. They randomly draw 20 of them. They post it on the window. If you're on it, bing, bang, boom, you get in. So Casey and I tried to do set of the night and the potluck open mic, as the store calls it, every Sunday and Monday. There was some that they weren't doing it, like Super Bowl Sunday, they weren't doing the game. Tonight is the Oscars. I'm surprised there's so many people out here because it's the Oscars. But again, maybe they're trying to avoid LA, so they came to Griffith Park. I don't know. And so they're closed down too. I don't know if all the clubs are closed, but nobody's doing comedy at the store tonight because of the Oscars. The Academy Awards are tonight. Which, by the way, I wanted to go to the Academy Awards and watch, and just hang out outside, and I don't think that's possible. I don't mind waiting through an audience. I don't really care about seeing celebrities, but figure it was something to do. that I've checked out of my Airbnb, and we're going to drive overnight to Vegas, so I had to spend some time during the day doing something. So that's another chance, though, to perform in front of the Booker. Those two shows at the Comedy Store, which, you know, again, infamous. And it wasn't until the last Monday of February that I got on. You know, that my name got drawn and did my 2 to 3 minutes in front of the Booker.
I want you guys to know, I do not suffer from obsessive compulsive disorder. I live with OCD. I suffer from people who talk to me like they think they have OCD. I was on a date with a woman one time and I told her that I have OCD, and she goes, "Oh my God, I have OCD. I have to make sure all the pictures in my house are straight." I told her I was late to our dinner date because I can't step on shadows. Like, you're not on my level, lady, okay? Don't culture appropriate my mental disorder.
And again, I think it went well. There wasn't as many people in the room. I was first to go up. There wasn't as many people in the room as I thought there was going to be, as I was hoping there was going to be. So it was a little light in there. But, you know, the comedians who hung out, you know, they're all supportive. They're all positive vibes. I feel like they genuinely like my jokes, you know. It's nice after a month that I started seeing people regularly and introducing myself to them and meeting people that, you know, kind of built a camaraderie after a month, you know. Now I'm losing all that and leaving for a year. And hopefully a year from now, those people, I can leverage those meetings with people and those connections with people I made. And so that's how the comedy club open mics work. And that's how some of these smaller little hole-in-the-wall places work their open mics. So where are their open mics? Well, comedians run open mics in places that they can figure out how to. And so we went to a couple of those. Most of them weren't worth it. Some of them were sad, full of crazy people, insane rambling people, or just rooms full of sad, depressed people just staring at you.
So I'm having dinner with this woman. And she goes, "Oh my God, I have obsessive compulsive disorder. I have to make sure all the pictures in my house are straight." I told her I was late to dinner because I can't step on shadows. Like, you're not on my level, lady. Don't culture appropriate my mental disorder.
Or, you know, surprise, comedy show. I didn't know I was going to see this. Please go away. There was a bit of that, too, which is, you know, it wasn't as heartbreaking as it normally was. Casey, and I kind of wish I would have went to this place. There's a place called Liquid Zoo in Van Nuys that has a Sunday open mic. Maybe we'll go to it tonight. It's a crazy town. Casey went to it, and he told me that the guy who went up to do comedy before him finished his set by doing a bump of cocaine on stage. So there's that. There's that kind of insanity that happens at comedy open mics here in L.A. But it's not the insanity. I mean, that's a good story. Good enough to where I told you about it. I don't need to experience it, but I can tell you about it. I don't need to experience it firsthand. But that's the insanity that kind of happens at comedy shows in L.A., at open mics. So I've worked some new jokes. I didn't write as much new material during this trip as I thought I was going to. Luckily, the new stuff I wrote instantly worked. And so it got moved into the regular repertoire. Now, the last place to talk about when it comes to open mics is Flappers. Now, I have a relationship with Flappers. I worked for them during the pandemic. I got close to owner Barbara. I got close to Josh the Booker. And it turns out the way they do open mics is a little untraditional. Apparently, their open mics were in the bar, and they were very traditional. And in the Yoo-Hoo room, they have three rooms. They have the bar, they have the main room, they have the Yoo-Hoo room. They apparently do their open mics untraditionally. And what happened was, first off, they have this whole comedian login profile system that they do where you have to create a profile, you have to get past, you have to go to a booking audition, you know, do two minutes in front of Josh. And I did that over the pandemic on Zoom, which was, you know, it was a formality, basically, because I was already performing at their open mics. They already could see that I'm not a crazy person. And somebody already booked me on one of the Zoom shows that Flappers was doing. So they're like, "We just need you to do this little audition thing because this is just our policy. You know, it's not where you're already booked on shows, and we're not going to unbook you. So I did it years ago. So they make everybody do this audition thing now to get on the open mics. And the reason is because they were having some issues with open mics, apparently, where people, you know, showing up and, you know, not buying item minimals, not paying the other thing that I say, instead of item minimals, a lot of places do open mics and they, you know, it's $5 or $10. $5 for 5 minutes, $10. I mean, it's a very New York thing to charge for open mics, and LA does it too. It's a very commonplace thing here too. So it's not that big of a deal. I guess there was an incident of a couple crazies, and so they moved the bar open mics out to the patio, so it's outside. So I did a lot of those on like nights when I was free, because also I had a $1,300 gift card to Flappers. So I went to Flappers a lot just to buy food, and I would do the open mic, eat. And their open mic went from having a lot of people to having few and few people, because you can't access the information online. You have to log in your profile. To get in the profile, you have to audition, and it's a whole thing. And they're going through a lot of changes in the way their standard operating procedures are right now. And I don't know if they're all for the best. I wish it for them for the best, but I talked to the staff a lot. Like I said, I spent $1,300 at Flappers this month. I was there a lot. And so the staff themselves, most of whom are not comedians, they're just regular people that work at bars and servers and bartenders and ticket takers, and they have some issues with the system as well. And I think personally, with the way the open mics are working, they're not developing new talent, which is going to hurt them in the long run. It's already hurting them because they're just turning away business or not being set up for business because nobody's coming to the open mics. They're not getting comedians to show up there. They're not creating a new talent. So that's their way. That's their thing. I hope it works out for them. We're getting sick of